Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Merlini et al. Titled, Reduced Nitric Oxide Bioavailability Mediates Cerebro-Arterial Dysfunction Independent of Cerebral Amyloid Angiopathy in a Mouse Model of Alzheimer's Disease. This article published online December 6th, 2016. Joining me today are consulting editor Vincenzo Leonetti, lead author Mario Merlini, and content expert Roy Weller. Let's get started.
Thank you, Cara. And let's start to talk about the hypothesis of your study, Mario. Alzheimer's disease is characterized by pathologic cerebrovascular remodeling. Who comes first?
Yeah, thank you, Vincenzo, for this very important question. So actually, until quite recently, the cerebrovascular pathology and Alzheimer's disease were thought of as two separate diseases, and especially that cerebrovascular pathology had not so much to do with AD. But this view has very much changed, and actually still very much changing due to a lot of work that is going on by many research groups in the world. And the point is just that who is first, I would actually say, they're actually coming together. And the difficulty, in a way, to say also who comes first is that the fact that the cerebrovascular pathology in AD is just very overwhelming. So it is difficult to delineate what is coming. And there are also several morphopathologies in AD that are directly linked to the Hallmark amyloid beta pathology, which have a direct influence on the blood vessels. However, this is really strictly seeing when you look at an AD brain, as well as a full AD pathology. But if you then look from a therapeutic and disease mechanistic point of view at a brain from a pre-AD state, so that are from people who have or had a mild cognitive impairment or so-called incipient dementia, very important clues actually show up that there is a pathology going on that is far before any other AD pathology comes up. And this you can see, for instance, in vivo in the humans with Tesla imaging modalities or post-mortem using histology. And in these subjects, what people have shown already is that, for instance, in a large Rotterdam study in the 2000s, that there is an increased cerebrovascular resistance. There are microinfarcts, alterations in the vessel constituents that are important for vessel dynamics, which in the end also affect clearance and thus buildup of toxic cerebral metabolites, for instance, shown by Roy and his colleagues in several studies. And there's also, for instance, vascular dementia or also vascular cognitive impairment that is also not strictly affected by the AD pathology or not started by it, but goes hand in hand and often precedes the AD pathology. So in a way, I would say they definitely go hand in hand, but there's a very strong sense and also evidence that there is a vascular pathology that comes on much before the AD.
Yeah, it is really interesting what you are saying. As you know, the endothelium produces its form of tau protein. Tau protein is related to Alzheimer's disease and even to amyloid deposit. What is the role of endothelial tau in the activity of endothelial nitric oxide synthesis? Is it affected by age?
Yeah, so tau, of course, plays a major role in neurodegeneration. Then we talk about tau in the neurons. Well, tau in vessels or in endothelial cells is absolutely not much studied. And one of the few studies that have been done is actually where endothelial tau, or tau in general, can enter the nucleus, can localize to the nucleus, and it can bind then to a so-called promoter region of the nitric oxide synthase 1 gene. And interestingly, that this gene is deregulated in AD. And by interfering with this gene, tau may affect then also endothelial NO production because it interferes then with the gene coding for nitric oxide synthase 1. However, again, this is very little research has been done in this. This is really work that should be opened up widely because so far we're only looking at neuronal tau pathology.
That's why you are saying, you are pointing out that endothelial tau and neuron tau are two different things, or we can say at this point of knowledge. However, I would like to ask to Roy, the endothelial dysfunction at the onset of Alzheimer's disease, in your opinion, is it an age or gene-dependent phenomenon?
I think this is difficult to say. The 95% of cases of Alzheimer's disease have no definite and clear genetic background. And so it may well be age related there. And the age changes in vessels could well increase the stress on and the oxidative stress on endothelium, so that this may be related to age. Now, the other 5% are related to genetic mutations in genes such as the amyloid precursor protein gene and presenilin genes. And this alters the pattern and the content of the peptides draining along the perivascular pathways. Because we've recognized that blood vessels have a number of functions. One is the supply of blood to the nervous system. The capillaries are the site of the blood-brain barrier for the entry of solutes and metabolites into the brain. But they also have this very important function of the drainage of metabolites and fluid from the brain and the maintenance of homeostasis. So the functioning of this pathway depends upon the integrity of the vessel, the structure of the basement membranes in the vessel wall, and also the nature of the solutes that's draining along them. So there's a tremendously complicated system here, and which element is actually affecting the endothelial cells in aging and in the genetic cases has really not been resolved.
Okay, Roy, but in your opinion, how much neurons bordering vessels interfere with the endothelial function or vice versa?
Well, there seem to be several ways in which neurons can influence vessels. There's the obvious way of the dopaminergic supply from the locus coeruleus and also the acetylcholinergic supply from the nucleus basalis. But also there's the production of metabolites from neurons and other cells in the brain that drain along the basement membranes of cerebral capillaries and then along the smooth muscle cell basement membranes, quite separate from the endothelium, along the arteries in the brain. So these could act as signaling molecules, particularly for the capillary endothelium and for the smooth muscle cells in the tunica media of the arteries. There's also an influence of endothelial cells on neurons because these are the site of the blood-brain barrier. So endothelial dysfunction could lead to the breakdown of the blood-brain barrier and inappropriate molecules entering the central nervous system that could harm neurons.
Okay. Roy, do you have some question to Mario you want to ask?
Yes, I was very interested in the nitric oxide story and the vasorelaxation. Exactly how does this work in arteries? How does the nitric oxide prepared by the endothelium reach the smooth muscle cells?
So in my understanding is that the enos in the endothelium, so the endothelium nitric oxide synthase and the NO that it produced from L-arginine is still possible to that transverse the barriers within the vessel wall to the smooth muscle cells, where it then can, via guanylate cyclase, increase intracellular cGMP. This inhibits then the calcium entry within the smooth muscle cells, and that causes then in the end also a reduction in the intracellular calcium concentration pool, which then in its own, and also in the arteries, causes then myosin phosphatase increase, and that causes dephosphorylation of the myosin light chain. However, so I think it's also important here that so cyclic GMP itself is also present in the smooth muscle cells, so it is in the endothelial and in the smooth muscle cells. And cyclic GMP is actually in the end the main regulator or modulator of the downstream effects of NO. So in this smooth muscle cells in the arteries, there's also the cyclic GMP by other means. So NO independent means can have cause vasodilation, so the relaxation of smooth muscle cells.
So cGMP is the hallmark that you try to evaluate to establish the relationship in your model, your functional relationship between endothelial function and amyloid deposit. However, histologically detected cGMP levels tend to reduce in an age-dependent manner more in transgenic than in wild-type mice. Why did you choose this method to evaluate the cGMP levels? And in your opinion, is it the best method to evaluate TNOS activity?
Yes, so the answer is actually a very practical one. Unlike, for instance, aortic sections, so from an aorta or any other peripheral vessel where you have quite a lot of material, the basilar artery in mice is extremely small. So to measure accurately, and not only accurately, but also getting reliable data from such a small amount of tissue, the cGMP from that, is very difficult. We proved for us very difficult in another method, for instance, with ELISA or other enzymatic assays. However, by histology, we were able to actually see it properly, even in the small tissue sections of that. The other reason why we chose the histology is because we really wanted to have on the very same section stain for a cGMP, but also for amyloid beta, and for markers, for instance, for reactive oxygen species. And that we could only do by histology to have really all of this at the very same section of each mouse. Just also to come back just to cGMP, the importance for cGMP itself, instead of measuring, for instance, NO, is that it's cGMP is one of the most accurate ways to assess the real levels of NO. However, your question, can it then accurately evaluate ENOS activity by histology? No, and I think that is one of the limitations of the study.
Roy, you talk about lymphatic drainage, right? You think that could be a crosstalk between nitric oxide synthase in lymphatic endothelial and arterial endothelial nitric oxide synthase. Do you think that there is an interaction between these two enzymes during the development of the disease?
Well, I think the lymphatic drainage of the brain right down to the neck region probably does not involve lymphatic endothelium. The system in the brain is quite unique in that fluid and solutes drain along 150 nanometer wide basement membranes in the walls of cerebral capillaries and in the walls of cerebral arteries. And it's not until the root gets to the cervical region that lymphatics are involved. And this has not been really very well investigated. So there isn't really any relationship between lymphatic endothelium and the endothelium in the blood vessels within the brain.
So, thank you, Roy. It's really interesting. Mario, I heard that you followed the production, scientific production of Roy Weller. Do you have some question for him about the development, the further step of your studies?
Yes, Vincenzo, that is absolutely right, that Roy's work, since actually my PhD, has really had an important influence and also kind of a scientific example for me to really look at. And it was also rationale behind this and a related previous study. So I would like to hear his thoughts on the potential and relevance of improving or restoring perivascular drainage as a therapy for AD.
Yes, it's a very interesting question because there are several factors that are relevant in the perivascular drainage system. First of all, there is the actual aging factors. The basement membranes that are the main root of the drainage, they age, they change their structure, they become thicker, they alter their protein content, but they are remarkable structures because they last for decades, they last for 100 years. So there must be some way by which the smooth muscle cells repair their basement membranes. But nevertheless, the damage accumulates. And there are also the smooth muscle cells that tend to decrease with aging, quite apart from the amyloid angiopathy. And then there are the solutes that pass along the basement membranes. And amyloid beta, of course, is a very awkward molecule because if there is any slowing of the drainage, the monomers form oligomers and then fibrilla deposits within the vessel walls. So all these things need to be considered. And the main key to the solution may lie with apolipoprotein E. We know that apolipoprotein E epsilon 4 is a major risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. And apolipoprotein E co-localizes with A beta, not only in the plaques, but also in the vessel walls in amyloid angiopathy. So with regard to the therapeutics, some sort of apolipoprotein E surrogate that would encourage the drainage of peptides and particularly A beta along the vessel walls could be used as a therapeutic agent.
It is known that we have several murine AD models, and you have selected a transgenic murine model of amyloidosis harboring the human Swedish and Arctic AD double mutation. Why this choice? How much your experimental model is similar to clinical condition?
Yes, that is a very important question indeed. Any mouse model, whatever you use for in the AD field, is basically doesn't model the exact Alzheimer's disease. They all just have parts. They just allow you to study few parts of the disease because most of them are only showing the amyloid pathology. So the reason we chose this specific Swedish Arctic mouse model is that it shows from a beta amyloid pathology point of view exactly what you also see in humans. So it shows both severe cerebral amyloid angiopathy and parenchymal plaques. It shows this also in a timely fashion. So in the very beginning of the disease stage in these mice, you have mainly intraneuronal, so more soluble A beta. Then later on, you see some parenchymal plaques. And then the CAA starts later. What you also see in these mice is that the larger arteries, especially the extracranial artery, what we looked at, for instance, the basilar artery, is not affected by CAA, but the intraparenchymal arteries and smaller vessels are. And that is also what you see in the human condition. So again, it allows you then to use this model to look at the specific, let's say, pathology within the Alzheimer, let's say, plethora of symptoms and morphologies. It at least allows you to look at this very specific one. And the specific Arctic A beta mutation is at an amino acid 693 of APP, and any mutation there really has an influence on the formation of CAA. And you see that, for instance, in humans with this condition, because in the end, it's a human transgene with the Arctic mutations. They both also have the CAA and parenchymal plaques, what you also see in the sporadic AD.
Thank you, Mario, and congratulations for this interesting study. And thank you, Roy, to support us in unraveling the mechanism behind the understanding of this study. Thank you at all.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.